Good morning. My name is Lois Ndzimane. I am the co-chair of the Constitutional Review Committee, the Joint Constitutional Review Committee, and I will open the session. My co-chair will then proceed with the facilitation. But it is important that we emphasize and we welcome everyone, members, presenters, officials with us from Parliament, other stakeholders, media, and ladies and gentlemen, and fellow South Africans. We are resuming with the oral presentation that we have started yesterday. Of course, bearing in mind that this is the last installment of the oral presentation, those that have the program, they know that from next week we will start consideration of the report that will be presented in the House in November. We are convening as part of the directives of the Constitution, that section 59 and 72, we have to facilitate the involvement and consultations on any subject matter that is critically important for South Africa. So this is a convening of rights, and also the constitutional rights and privileges in the Constitution obligation to apply the joint rules of Parliament to apply in the manner we're conducting ourselves as we engage with each other. Members are here to facilitate the consult with the public, so that with the stakeholders that are invited here today. So, presenters, you are at liberty to exercise your rights and privileges. You are at liberty. Members might want to know who you represent. It's up to you to sit, if you're free to say so. If you're not, you're not. And there is no obligation to disclose all what you feel. It's not necessarily relevant for the process. So if we ask you who funds you and all this, all that, if you are at liberty to answer or not to answer, you are not obliged to answer any questions that are not relevant to clarity questions, which is the purview of or the obligation that these members are having to do, to ask clarity questions on your views, your opinions, and your presentation. So likewise, members, we really want to plead with you that please be relevant in your inquiry, in your facilitation of clarity for all of us to be able to materially make considered views when we consider the report. That having been said, Coach, we will then, in terms of the program, call first presenter. Are you here?
Yes, sir. We are here. We are ready to go.
Right. Let's give it a first shot. You have 10 minutes to do everything. If you want to tell us or find you, everything in 10 minutes. And we'll ask clarity questions. Members, we prefer that you also take 10 minutes. Really clarify questions, and please bear us with your statement. You can format us from next week with your views and opinions and feedback. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Ken Phillips, Executive Director of the SWFI Foundation, whose mission it is to promote and defend the Constitution and to foster constructive intergroup and interpersonal relations. We regard this issue as obviously very important, not only for land reform, but also for the future of property rights and the future of the economy and race relations. We are opposed to any amendment to Section 25 to allow for EWC, and we will state our reasons for this. But we also do not support the status quo on land reform and ownership at the moment, and we will make specific recommendations on how this could be improved. I will speak about the possible amendment of Section 25. My two colleagues, Sebelapi Dube, who is the director of our Center for Constitutional Rights, and Zora Dawood, who is our director of Center for Unity and Diversity, will address the issue of how we believe land reform could and should be speeded up. Chair, together with numerous jurists, including the late Arthur Chaskelson and the high level panel chaired by former President Kalema Motlanthe, we believe it's not necessary to change Section 25 of the Constitution to effect land reform and extend property rights. Firstly, we do not think that the Constitution is at fault. We do not believe that the Constitution has been used properly, utilized, Section 25 as it is. According to the high level panel report, the failure of land reform so far may instead be ascribed primarily to the incapacity of the government departments involved and to corruption. Therefore, we believe that Section 25 could be used to effect proper land reform. We further believe that an amendment of Section 25 to allow EWC would firstly have extreme negative political implications for the country, including possible political instability, and it would also destroy the national accord that we as a country reached in 1994 with the interim constitution, 96 with the final constitution. Secondly, we believe it will create irrevocable harm to agricultural production and food security, as well as future investment in other sectors of the economy. I think that there's ample evidence of that already. And thirdly, we think that depending on what exactly the changes are envisaged, it could have negative legal implications for non-racialism, equality and the rule of law if the amendment is inconsistent with Section 36 law of general application and if the jurisdiction of the courts to determine just and equitable compensation is removed. In addition, a few last general remarks from my side. We believe expropriation should be the last option that the state should consider for achieving agricultural land reform. There's millions of hectares of government land and 20,000 commercial farms up for sale. There are also promising approaches to land reform, also here in the Western Cape, and as organized agriculture before U.S. repeatedly made good practical proposals, but so far with no success. With regard to suitable urban land reform, we believe that the acquisition for such land for housing should be the primary objective to empower the millions of people who have fought in the cities in recent years. And finally, governments should finally, we believe, consider the adoption of legislation to enable the fast-tracking of the provision of title deeds to millions of backed-up applicants. I hand over to my colleague, Mr. Pilato Jube.
Thank you very much, Ken. So as Ken has already mentioned, my name is Pilato. I am the director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is a unit within the Civil Foundation. But my mission this morning is to focus on the legalities and look at the crisp legal question regarding expropriation of compensation, and taking off from the position that tends to be elucidating upon that the foundation doesn't support expropriation without compensation. And we say this because the current constitution does two purposes. It first of all protects property rights to the extent that they are not arbitrarily interfered with against just and equitable compensation, and also for a public purpose and in the public interest requirement. And the second purpose of the property clause as it currently stands is to ensure just and equitable access to land, and the three tenets of land reform that I established in terms of Section 25, namely the creation of tenure security, land restitution, and then the redistribution. So that said, the current Expropriation Act is the key piece of legislation that's meant to give effect to expropriation. And in that regard, it's a law which predates the Constitution. And in many ways, it does not reflect the values of the Constitution. And it is our submission that this is a key law which is really standing in the way of robust land reform. So for example, the Expropriation Act talks about compensation at market value, and it defines market value as that which a willing buyer would pay to a willing seller, and yet the Constitution does not posit market value as the key factor which should be taken into account when one is compensating for the property which has been expropriated. And secondly, it only talks about the public purpose, and it doesn't consider the public interest, which is where, in many ways, land reform is timid, because public purpose is a much narrower requirement. And thirdly, it doesn't recognize unregistered land rights, and I think, as we know from the high-level panel, being the de facto owners of that land, but they're not registered as owners in terms, as formal owners, the owners in terms of the Deed Registry Act. And for that reason, they are not given protection in terms of the current expropriation act. So our submission in this regard is that we need to bring back the current expropriation law, which is lying in the National Assembly, in order to address these shortcomings that we have identified, in order for there to be a robust application of land reform. And then now moving on to the tenets of land reform itself. I'm not going to dwell on land restitution because we have the law, the Land Restitution Act, and that in its own needs to be properly implemented. But my purpose today is to talk about land redistribution. And our submission is that we need an all-encompassing law which establishes how exactly South Africa is going to go about land redistribution. Firstly, we need a law that's going to define what exactly just and equitable access to land means in terms of the Constitution. We need a redistribution law that's able to identify beneficiaries of land reform and really ask the question, what exactly is the intention behind land redistribution? Are we creating a new class of agrarian farmers, or are we seeking to improve livelihoods and food security in South Africa? So our submission at this point is that we need a law that governs land redistribution, because at the moment there is a lot of policy uncertainty. And my final point in this regard is that of tenure security. And with respect, when it comes to tenure security, the National Assembly is very much in breach of its constitutional obligations, because Section 25, Subsection 6 of the Constitution mandates the National Assembly to enact a law which is going to see to tenure security. And the existing laws which seek to fulfill these laws are not, to fulfill tenure security are insufficient, namely the informal protection of land rights, the ESTA Act itself, as well as the Labour Tenant Reform Act. So that is the sum total of our submission, that we need to reform the current law, and that the Constitution does not stand in the way of robust land reform.
My name is Zora Dowd, and I'm the Director of the Centre for Unity in Diversity. My colleagues, Tiens Elop and Pepsi Dube, elucidated on the general components and the legal aspects of our submission. I want to really reflect on the section or the sets of recommendations that this committee is going to have to labour with next week, and that is, what is the way forward? You have heard multiples of submissions. The short, sharp response from the SW de Klerk Foundation is the committee should focus on two key mechanisms going forward. The first of which is a land audit, and the second is a special purpose vehicle in order to effect speedy land reform. These two specific actions can be undertaken with immediate effect, we argue. Both recommendations offer dividends in the short and medium term and enable government to manage the land reform program from both an informed and a proactive perspective. So those are the operative words for us, informed and proactive. In respect of the land audit, government, principally through the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as other departments, including Public Works, Defence, amongst others, ought in ideal circumstances to maintain a rolling current land register through regular land audits. This, we know, is not the case. The value of a current land audit and keeping current of land audits is to maintain, in our opinion, able stewardship of government's assets and utilize these to fulfill policy and legal obligations to citizens. In the case under review, land restitution, tenure upgrade and redistribution, compositely referred to as the land reform program, must be located within an accurate and credible land audit, whose definitions of land type is accurate and whose data sets are above reproach.
Like
this is not the case. Sorry?
We'd like to conclude.
Yes. And this is not the case, we argue. The second issue, the second recommendation that we place before you is that of the creation of a special purpose vehicle to expedite land reform. And we make this recommendation as an imperative for land reform. It's similar to that which the Department of Justice undertook in 2010.
You have your submission, right?
Absolutely.
Sure.
We've got hard copies there of our written submission, so please, and we're obviously able to answer questions. So, just to reiterate, Chair, it's the land audit and the special purpose.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair will then facilitate your members to ask direct questions.
Honourable Smith, Honourable Goranov, Honourable Mukwili, Honourable Rossis, and Honourable Schwartz, and lastly, Honourable Pita.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the presenters and start by saying I don't think there is any dispute around legislation in line with Section 36. And that, by the way, is in the process. So let's start there, get that one out of the way. I've got two questions, though. If I understood Mr. Ilov correctly, I thought you were saying that if we change the Constitution, there's a risk of political unrest. Now, with respect, sir, I would argue that if there is no change, there's a greater risk of political unrest because of the greater number of people who have this expectation of it. What is your comment on that? Secondly, we've listened to many people over the past few weeks, both face to face and when they came here, and many argue that they would want a very explicit clause in the Constitution, Section 25, that says expropriation with zero compensation or without compensation should be put in there. And my argument always has been that those that are learned come to Parliament and say to Parliament, it's implied in the Constitution. And you're correct, I'm not arguing that it's implied in the Constitution. However, those that are in most need of the land don't have the same kind of level of understanding that you have that it's implied. And all they are asking is just put it there so that it is not contested. What would you say to that? Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. Should I answer immediately or do you want to take two questions?
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the presenters. It was good to listen to you. In your submission, you know, there is no doubt that you are in favour of land. And there is no doubt that you say that we don't need to change the Constitution because presently expropriation without compensation is possible. Now, I want to ask, Dr. Yellow, you wrote a piece for Network 24. It's published, I think, in August, 20th of August. Maybe Tetsi Dube can also comment on that. And in that article, you were saying that that Section 25.2 is the critical subsection to be amended. Now, in that piece, you discussed three scenarios, but let me just dwell with the first one. You say that the principle of expropriation without compensation must be an exception to the general rule stated in 25.2, but that the detail must be in a new expropriation law. So what you're saying, that is one scenario. I'm not saying you support it. You're saying that is one scenario. Now my question, why would it be wrong to put in that, to amend 25.2 to say that the principle of expropriation without compensation must be an exception to the general rule? And you put the details into the expropriation law. Why will that be wrong? And then secondly, you also suggest the possibility to change 25.4b, where you define property as land when you deal with expropriation with compensation. Why will it be wrong to put that into an amendment in the Constitution? On judicial review, I fully agree. Obviously, we cannot take that away. That will not be possible. So I would like to comment on that.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation, sir. The fact that we mentioned yesterday that every time when white people come here, they, all of them, irrespective of which institution they represent, they disagree with the amendment of the Constitution. Also, our observation that whenever they come with a black person, that person will definitely disagree. It's a fact and an observation that we have seen. And in terms of how they put their facts, being legal, business or otherwise, all their arguments are the same. So it clearly shows that there is a tendency whereby this mob of 1652 divided themselves to subcommittees of mob of 1652.
Point of order.
To make sure
that
they...
Point of order, please.
Let's hear the point of order.
I would submit that what is being said is not a point of clarity, and it is objectionable to the presenters. We have treated presenters with respect, and please let us continue with that principle. I would ask that the statement is out of order, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, we pleaded with you members. We cannot say what you should not say and what you should say. But please just bear with us and just give the respect. Your opinions on them are your own opinions, not for all of us. But presenters, as I said earlier, you are at liberty to also make statements back.
The reason why I'm saying this, Chair, is an observation that will assist us when we deliberate on our report. Now, it must be noted that I'm saying this based on the fact that my sister over there, a doctor or a professor, I forgot her name, she came here representing another organization with the same argument. She comes here again representing another organization with the same argument. But nonetheless, this organization called F.W. de Klerk was formed in 1999, if my memory serves me well. And its mission is to promote and preserve F.W. de Klerk's legacy. And when one checks what is the legacy of F.W. de Klerk, you will understand why I'm quoting this. And also they claim that they advocate for peace and unity. Now, how are we going to have peace in South Africa when the most vulnerable community of South Africa, which happens to be black, can't access land? And in your presentation, sir, you did mention that there will be war. It's a fact. You are cautioning us of something that you are busy preparing yourself to.
Chair, that is objectionable in the strongest
possible
terms.
It's a fact that you are disdaining your people for war. I've got proof to that. And I think this organization, they are saying they are responsible.
No, Honorable Mukwili, remember in meetings, the decency of meetings, that when the point of order is raised, you and we point that to you, we it's by decency you have to stop to allow the point of order to be heard.
We cannot allow the propagation of war by a MP that is an aspersion on the presentation that spoke to political uncertainty. This is outrageous, and it amounts to hate speech in terms of our constitution. It is not allowed, Chair. And I'd ask you that we ask clarity questions. The member has already been on the floor for almost 5 minutes. You've given us 10 minutes. This is unacceptable, Chair.
Honourable Mkwili, please, can you be relevant and be to the point?
I'm precisely on point.
All right.
I'm going to raise my issues based on what this institution represents. It must be clear to our people what are we dealing with. Yes. It must be clear.
Yeah. All right. It's fine. Hey, let's hear the point of order.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this meeting is not to interrogate the organisation and the establishment of the organisation. We are here to listen to a presentation and ask questions for clarity. We cannot allow the abuse of this platform for narrow political means. So, Chair, I ask you that you please act and take a firm decision. Because we cannot continue like this. This is an embarrassment.
It cannot be correct that
yeah.
they Honourable are hitting a gender.
Wait, Honorable Mkwili, why do you reply when they are speaking to the chair? When a member is speaking to the chair? Honorable Mkwili, please be cooperative. And make your point, and we members, we're now going to take. Are you having a point of order, Honorable President? Yeah, that's what I wanted to. Remember, from now on, we will give you 1 minute for clarity.
The program that is before us,
I haven't done what I'm saying. You are doing deliberations. If what you are doing now so far, you've been doing deliberations. And therefore, it's not what we are here to do. And I'm saying this, whether you accept it or not, you are out of order in terms of what you are doing. What you are even saying yourself, that you want everybody, the public, to know who is this organization. That's not what we are here about. It's you who say that on record here. So you are out of order, and please, we would like to take the next speaker now. Next speaker.
Chair, I'm still asking questions.
You haven't asked questions and you've taken more
so
than 5 minutes.
So you're denying me my right to ask a
more
question.
More than 5 minutes. I would rather...
Based on which rule? There's no rule that says a committee member is given a particular time. There's
all
no
right.
rule.
Okay.
Unless you refer
all right.
to
I'm
a rule.
I'm giving you a minute.
Chair,
I'm
don't suppress me.
I'm not suppressing
you. No, that's what you have been doing since yesterday. That's why you don't want your chair to chair this thing. You have been doing this,
yeah.
and we are observing that. We cannot allow the mob of 1652. Allow the mob of 1652 to determine our fate.
Yeah.
We can't.
Members, please
we
hold
can't.
On. Hold on with your point of order. Honorable Philly, you have a minute. And then
what?
Other members must participate. Please conclude.
I have a point of order.
All right, let's take a point of
order. And I'm having some time, and I keep on being ignored, and
it's
I'm getting tired of it.
Wait. You are not ignored.
President, but you said to listen
to the ruling. We were still dealing with that, and I was concluding by giving a minute to Honourable Mukwege. But take your point. Let's take your point of order.
Mr. Chair, you said at the outset that you could ask clarity seeking questions. This member has been waffling on for the last 10 minutes. She has yet to ask the question, and she just now said that she has to sit here with people who murdered her people. Now, I take the strongest possible offense to that statement. And the National Party, that was presented by murdered our people. That's the National Party.
Honourable Mukwege.
That's the National Party. That these people are representing.
Honourable Mukwege.
That is the charity that was representing.
Honourable Mukwege.
Please. I'm sorry, I can't.
You don't have to. Get to some point.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if you can't control this meeting, I suggest you find someone who can.
The commander in the army. All right, Honourable Mulder, can you proceed with the presentation, with your clarity second question?
Chairperson, I'm on a point of order.
Oh, your point of order, all right.
There are some of us around this meeting that take this issue rather seriously, and I understand that that member hasn't been in Parliament for very long. I suggest that we get administration to workshop it so that you understand what this is about. We would like to proceed with this process in a very serious manner. So I suggest, Chairperson, that we give the next person who asked to ask the question now a chance, and we don't have to listen to that member. In the meantime, the administration can workshop it.
Yeah. Honourable Lodrick, can you ask a correct clarity question, second question?
Chairperson, I want to plead with you, if you can't call this member to order,
we have done so.
We can proceed with this meeting because it's very uncomfortable sitting here with someone making these kinds of comments. And,
Honourable Lodrick, please ask your question. We have clearly made rulings that against what Honourable Mukwege said, that she's out of order, and there's a record of what she's saying that is out of order.
Chair, there are two of you. Can you not control one member? Really? Two of you. You can't control one member.
Honourable President, please. We can't be emotional, all of us, even the chairs here. All right, just Honourable Lodrick, please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I really apologise for this great embarrassment. This is not how Parliament should be. Thank you for the presentation. Could you please?
Honourable Lodrick, this is disruptive now.
You are out of order. And you are not assisting this meeting to achieve what you want.
You are disrupting the meeting, and it's not acceptable. Honourable Lodrick.
Thank you. My first question was also asked by the Honourable Smith, and that is about the whole issue of your views on the implied versus explicit meaning of what is meant in Section 25. But then I would like to ask your views on what do you deem to be just an equitable compensation? Would that, for example, in your view, be could it include zero compensation? And then also, what is your view on the tension between just and equitable access and just and equitable compensation? And how does one deal with that? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the next member. Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. And it is an embarrassment, and I want to apologise to the presenters on behalf of Parliament for the way that they've been treated in these dispersions that have been made. We need to treat each other with respect as we try to find a solution to the issues that are facing our nation. I would like to ask the question relating to the indication that you've given, unpack this possible solution of a special purpose vehicle. You didn't have enough time. I'd like briefly for you to unpack that. Secondly, the issue is that many presenters come and say there is already sufficient provision in Section 25 to allow under exceptional circumstances expropriation without compensation in the present formulation. There are other people that say it's not clear, and that is why there's a need for an amendment. Is a possible solution not to approach the Constitutional Court to give clarity on the existing parameters of Section 25 so that we can then have clarity, and that will provide clarity to everyone that is concerned, and that will then give the understanding as to where we are faced with in our nation. Thank you very much.
Honourable Pradhana.
Thank you, Chair. Summarizing what you have just offered, you're offering a wide variety of a bouquet of alternatives to avoid giving land to the landless. We appreciate the your offerings. But here's my clarification question, which is my bouquet. Do you not think that land grabs are a clear demonstration of extreme hunger for land, given that those people who do it actually habitate the land? They don't hoard it. They occupy it. They build houses and so forth. Is it not in the public interest that the public of South Africa all have unhindered and equal access to land, which is a constitutionally backed up requirement, if you look at Section 2, without having to rely on ad hoc applications? In other words, the suggestion by the lady in the middle is almost like saying, when you say people who need land should be identified, it's almost like saying all the millions of South Africans that have got no land must show up one by one, tell government that I need land for a garden, I need land for my farm, I need land for agriculture, I need land to start a factory, and we're talking millions. What is that in some administrative process when you say bills should be identified one by one, so to say? You didn't say one by one, but basically, that's what you say. Now, if you look at the bouquet of my question, is about questioning your approach to solving an ages-old political problem that still persists in South Africa. You can give me a rounded off response, not just piecemeal, you know, it was a bouquet, as I said. That's my clarification question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Just one comment on my part, so that you don't have to deal with that matter. In the public hearings for our group, and I think those that were in my group would bear witness to this, that we have met white people that are for the amendment of the Constitution, that they argued for the amendment of Section 25. And in this parliament, I could even recall Dr. Marcus, I think, from University of Pretoria, in my recollection, and listening from the accent, he is white. And so I'm saying, so you don't have to respond to the issue of black and white, and who says what in terms of that. So stick to your opinions and as you presented them in your submissions, as you answer the questions that were posed. Thank you,
Chair. We would answer questions. I'll do a few and then I'll hand over to Ms. Dube and then to Ms. Dowd. On the Honourable Smith's question of the greater danger of unrest, it's our view that the greatest need of the majority of people of South Africa is to get out of poverty and get jobs. That's been well documented. We do not believe that agricultural land, even though it's an important factor, is the greatest need. We believe, and in that sense I'll come back to Honourable Fontana, that urban land is in more demand for staying. So our problem is that even just with this process going on, illegal land grabs have increased. If there's a blanket change of Section 25, We believe that most people will not wait for processes and for legislation. And that will carry on hand to hand, and that will lead to political unrest and instability. Because there will be reactions, and not just from white or ordinary people. But it is, as I say, it's a deal. We do not dispute the fact that people want land, but we believe that it's well documented that they want land for housing in the first place. Doesn't mean that agricultural land should be excluded, not at all. I think what we said is that we are for a speedy process of accelerating land reform. On the honorable Kurnov, on the three scenario options, perhaps I should just put that in context. That article was written after the president said that the ANC had accepted that it would change. And so this was, in a sense, an analysis. And therefore, I cannot speak as on behalf of the foundation, but what I can say is that obviously politics is the art of the possible. And if this committee and parliament should decide to change that, there are preferable options and less preferable options. I believe that the constitution presents something of an accord that one shouldn't tamper with easily, especially on the Bill of Rights. And if we can do this without tampering with the Constitution, it will send a strong signal to all, not just to certain segments of the population, but to all, and also to the international community and investors. And therefore, I think we believe that the rules should be equitable and just compensation, and that there can be exceptions to that rule, but very importantly, the courts, we believe, and not politicians or anyone else must agree, must decide that the courts must decide. Then on the honorable Lord Treat, just and equitable, difficult question that Malawi will also speak to that. My own sense is that if I look at the possible categories that have been mentioned in the public debate, for instance, abandoned land, land that is heavily indebted, or land where people have lived for decades and the owner has not done anything for it. I can imagine that in those cases, very little compensation needs to be paid. For me, the principle would be that it should never be zero, but it could be one. It could be a nominal amount to keep the principle that there should be a transactional approach in this regard. I think that's an important principle. It means no one can just take land. It was always, there was always be something paid. And the courts, we believe, should decide what exactly should that be for, let's say, an abandoned piece of land. Then Zora will speak to the HPV. Just perhaps on the, just to conclude, Chair, we agree that there's hunger for land. But the hunger for land is for a place to stay, to put your house on. So the land grabs are in those areas where the people who have the most power to change it are municipalities, are state-owned enterprises with large tracts of land, Transnet, Eskom, close to cities. It's not in the first place farmers. And so what we propose in this legislative framework and with the SPV is to cut through all the bureaucracy by the SPV to make sure that hunger is addressed. And we believe, yes, that is of utmost importance together with jobs.
Thank you, Petanaki. And I think there was a question on the difference between just and equitable compensation distinguished from just and equitable compensation. I think that's a strict legal question, and it takes into account the three tenets of land reform that are in Section 25. Namely restitution, redistribution, and creation of secure tenure. So the just and equitable access is in line with the fact that Section 25 is really a socio-economic right, and it's the same as the right to housing and the right to social security, and that is a qualified right which isn't immediately available, and that would be with reference to redistribution and creation of secure tenure. Whereas restitution, on the other hand, is different from the other two, because restitution is about a right which was previously owned but was lost. So in that sense, restitution is immediately available, unlike there is redistribution and tenure security. So it just comes down to the legality and how exactly it's framed. And then I think there was a clarity-seeking question on the issue of how exactly land redistribution would work, the legalities regarding land redistribution, and the question as to who exactly would be a beneficiary of land redistribution. So we've made that point with reference to what the high-level panel report has already established, namely the fact that because we do not have a piece of all-encompassing legislation, there's a lot of policy uncertainty which depends on the political head. So at the moment, the means of redistribution is through the proactive land acquisition strategy. And in terms of that strategy, it's really about the government acquiring farms and holding those farms and granting a certain amount of leasehold to identify beneficiaries. But of course, the problem with that is that these are individuals who do not have title, and without support from the state, they are unable to access any kind of mortgages or any kind of loans. So in that respect, it's led to a high rate of failure because firstly, there is no support, and secondly, these individuals are unable to assist themselves. So we're saying that we need to have a proper legislative framework which properly identifies beneficiaries. And another issue that the high-level panel report flagged was the fact that because there was so much leeway, it gave room in many instances to a kind of state capture within the agricultural sector, and it led to individuals who ordinarily should be able to access the market on their own, but it led to individuals who were benefiting over individuals who were indigent and individuals who were most likely to have were most likely in need of restitution. So it's on that basis that we're saying that we need to properly identify who exactly is meant to benefit from land redistribution, and just to create an overarching legislative framework that rules out policy uncertainty.
Perhaps I could, in response to Honourable Swart, the creation of the special purpose vehicle is very similar and has precedent in that which was undertaken by the Department of Justice in 2010. And broadly, a special purpose vehicle is a legal entity created to fulfill narrow, specific, or temporary objectives. And this is what we're advocating for. It's got to, in some ways, be ring-fenced because it has very specific terms of reference. And the other parallel that we're drawing is, many of us recall, and perhaps hanker for the days when SARS was under the control of Minister Gordhan, and that's what we would like, is a high-level, high-caliber group of people who are heading up such a special purpose vehicle and must report directly in the first instance to the President. This is imperative for all of the reasons that we've outlined. Land reform is critical. It cannot be left to float between departments for political conflicts, for other conflicts, to imperil land reform within the purview of the Constitution. The logistical and administrative architecture of a special purpose vehicle is key to its success. It must be independent, comprised of the best brains, much like those at SARS, as I mentioned, and have a mandate and support from the very top. Its defining features, too, are in terms of reference and a time frame. Thank you.
Tim, may I add one sentence? The reason we propose this is that it's clear from the high-level report that the capacity in the relevant department is not good, and to even take the decision, any decision, and hope that you'll get anything done by that department, is a dream. The second small point is that we believe that such a special purpose vehicle will be able to cut through from national to local, but also horizontally across departments. And unless we do that, this won't happen.
Yeah, we then that then concludes the presentation from the
F.W. de Klerk Foundation, we thank you for interest and making an effort to give our process. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
For enriching.
Thanks to the members.
Co-chair?
Thank you very much, chair. The next presentation will be from Mr. Brian Maslow.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and members of your committee, good morning. My name is Brian Musto. I'm a lawyer and active member of the financial services sector. I represent over 100 mostly urban taxpayers. My supporters are not averse to land reform, but not if it involves the destruction of property rights, which will irreparably harm the economy. As you know, and as Minister Tito Mboweni in his MPBS has pointed out, South Africa is in serious financial trouble and can no longer afford expensive populist policies. The Economist says there are no quick fixes for South Africa's economy, and we wait with bated breath for some glimmer of hope from President Ramaphosa's investment summit, which kicks off today. Given this economic backdrop, why are some still advocating policies of expropriation that have failed miserably in Zimbabwe, leading to economic collapse, as well as the exodus of hundreds of thousands of Zimbabweans who now earn their livelihood in South Africa? The economy of Venezuela, which attempted to replace farmers with peasants on expropriated land, is in free fall as its citizens continue to flee the country. Its inflation rate will hit 10 million% in 2019. Because unemployment is such a huge problem in South Africa, politicians keep scratching their heads for a quick fix. The EFF slogan, expropriation without compensation, was adopted largely under the influence of a populist President Jacob Zuma, without thought for the economic consequences and especially its impact on the poor. Section 25.4 of our Bill of Rights reaffirms the nation's commitment to land reform. Statistics show that to date the land reform process has virtually been completed. Over the last 23 years, the Land Claims Court has resolved over 95% of the claims that have arisen. Over 1.8 million individuals have received compensation, either in the form of land or money, and fewer than 3,500 claims remain unresolved. One now asks, can further land reform be justified, and should the state continue to meddle with property rights? The history of state intervention in agriculture is a sorry one, and instead of improving a lot, it has exacerbated the plight of the poor. Virtually all players in the land reform space in South Africa are agreed that land reform legislation such as ESTA Act 62 of 1997 and the Land Reform Labour Tenants Act No. 3 of 1996, as well as government's vacillating policy on land restitution over the years, white papers, green papers, and threats by successive ministers of agriculture have spooked our farmers into fearing expropriation of large parts of their farms. Given this environment, many farm owners have taken steps to reduce the number of farm workers on their farms to the bare minimum, fearing that these workers might become potential claimants to their farms. In fact, in the period 2004 to 2012, the IDC estimates that over 1 million jobs in farming, fisheries and forestry sector were lost. Other data show that most of these job losses were in the agricultural sector. This committee, Mr. Chairman, needs to face up to the hard reality that to date the wrath of legislation and threats of expropriation have not led to prosperity, but in many cases contributed to poverty and homelessness. Billions have been wasted on failed farming ventures supported by state subsidies, where new tractors now lie rusting in the veld, not to mention widespread corruption, for example, the Isina Dairy Project and many others. Right now in Zimbabwe, the state is reversing its failed land policies and going in the opposite direction to South Africa. It has put a stop to its failed farm mechanization scheme, its finance minister Nkubi announced, quote, movement towards a market-based supply and demand-driven approach would be more efficient and sustainable and also reduce the greater burden of reliance on the fiscus. Mr. Chairman, there is nothing like an empty treasury to give a state and a people a reality check, causing a sea change in direction and less interference in the economy. The best thing Parliament can do at this time is to restore local and overseas investor confidence in property ownership by affirming that Section 25 of the Constitution sets out the only basis by which land can be acquired by the state in the public interest, which includes to fulfill, quote, the nation's commitment to land reform and to reforms to bring about equitable access to all South Africa's resources as required by Section 25(4). Many influential leaders, including former Presidents Thabo Mbeki and Kgalema Motlanthe, as well as Patrice Motsepe, support an unamended Section 25. They prefer to protect the Bill of Rights, not undermine it. A clear exposition of the reasons why Section 25 need not be amended to achieve the nation's commitment to land reform is contained in an article in the August 2018 issue of the SA Attorney's Journal De Rebus, a copy of which I will hand in to this committee. The authors, Hopkins and Ardendorf, make the following cogent points on Section 25 and land expropriation, and I quote, quote, thus the Constitution requires nothing more than that the owner of land being expropriated receives whatever compensation is, in the totality of circumstances, just and equitable. It need not be market value, and it need not be based on the willing buyer and willing seller principle. They conclude, thus looking at the structure of Section 25, the following is apparent. One, the amount of compensation may vary from anywhere between zero and market value, depending on what is just and equitable in the circumstances. Two, a nominal amount of compensation may be regarded as just and equitable in some circumstances, and even where a nominal amount of compensation is required, the state may nonetheless elect not to pay anything at all, in which case the owner's rights may be limited. But the limitation could still be lawful if it is a reasonable and justified limitation in the circumstances. Section 25(8) and Section 36. Three cases of the latter possibility come to mind. Firstly, Premier Helen Zille has indicated that Section 25 can be used to expropriate private land diminished by sand farming for minimal compensation in order to properly house the people of Isiqhwalo on adjacent land in the Cape Flats. Second, Mayor Herman Mashaba wants to expropriate absentee slumlords in Johannesburg in order to revamp 500 central city buildings into affordable housing units. It is probable that these buildings can be expropriated under Section 25 for minimal and no compensation. Thirdly, organizations such as AFRA, which will speak to you just after me, I believe, says that farmland occupied by labour tenants should now be confiscated and given to the tenants. To the farm owner, this is patently unfair, Mr. Chairman. However, this is exactly the type of situation that Section 25 is designed to address. It is up to the courts to ensure fairness and determine what compensation, if any, is payable to the farm owner. To conclude, expropriation of any property is a blunt instrument and an invasion of property rights whether compensation is paid or not. It should only be used as the exception rather than the rule. The land reform program is a constitutional imperative, but by 2018 most legitimate land claims have already been settled. The majority of South Africa's population is urbanized, and more assistance to those municipalities who are providing low-cost housing and service stands is needed. Here, the cash-strapped fiscus will have to spend money. Reserve Bank Governor Letsetse Kanyako, referring inter alia to land expropriation in Zimbabwe and Venezuela, said, quote, unorthodox policies have totally orthodox consequences. He added that while populists were good at tapping into social frustrations, they were not very good at economics. As a result, their ideas routinely ended in disaster. Hardly any countries in the world have tried expropriation without compensation. The few that have done so with devastating economic consequences. Mr. Chairman, I submit that this committee must do the right thing, not the populist thing. It must recommend that Section 25, without amendments, is the sole legitimate mechanism whereby the state can undertake land reform which will not undermine property rights, food security, and jobs. Finally, Mr. Chairman, please remember that Parliament must always act legitimately. Even if it has the power to do so, it should never approve amendments to the Constitution which per se are unjust and inequitable. To do otherwise would be to undermine the very fabric of our Constitution, setting us on the path to an autocracy and abuse by whoever comes into power in the future. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Musto. Is it Musto?
Master.
Okay. Members, then we have it from Mr. Musto. Can we engage with his presentation and limit ourselves to clarity seeking questions? I'll start with this Honorable Mukwege, Honorable Fitani, Honorable Smith, in that order. Our response will be the last.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you. I don't know how to pronounce your name.
Master,
I won't say it because it doesn't mean you want to pronounce my name properly. It's fine. Chair, you know, I hope I won't be disrupted when I raise my issue. But in your presentation, on page 20 of it, you did mention Bible 10 commandments, two of them. One is, you say, I will quote, if that is not enough, it is clearly also a breach of at least two of the 10 commandments, the highest law of the Judeo-Christian faith of most South African and several other faiths too. For here God commands both stealing and the converting of the property of others. This is my humble submission. Now, I want to check with you, Corey, when you did mention this commandment that thou shalt not steal, who stole from whom in this instance? Because according to my eye, listen, you will answer me. Just note that question.
I'm not trying to disrupt you. You ask a question, but don't deliberate on that question.
No, Che. I'm trying to be. I'm trying to be liberal like you want me to be. I'm trying to do that. But you can't tell me what to say. That one I won't allow. I'm trying to be liberal. Because that is the system that you are living in. I'm asking him a question. But I have to come.
Okay.
All the issues that he didn't mention. That who stole from who? Because according to my knowledge, is that the land was stolen from the blacks. So why are you then, when we need to take what is rightfully ours, you quote this Bible verse? And who is telling lies here? Because in the very same quote that you did, There is a commandment that says, thou shall not lie. So, who is lying to who here? Because the history that we have written to us clearly describes how the land was taken from us. So, it is like that. And we know, according to our ancestral information, that our land has been taken and the Bible was given to us so that we can follow it stereotypically as it is, and we are not a thing. Now, there's no rule that it's about 10 minutes on COVID. No. No. But guys, no, this is unfair to me. This is really, I don't disturb anyone when he's making his point. Always when I speak,
I'm trying to protect you.
Yeah, you must tell them to keep quiet, man. Yeah.
I also not interact with members who are on the podium. But Honorable Kweli, obviously the issue of time is a
Chair. Everybody here have spoken and they have deliberated. I'm speaking based on the presentation before me. Why am I now limited again? Why am I limited? No, don't do that. No, don't do that. No, don't do that. Don't do that. It is within my life. You are wasting my 5 minutes. No, you are delaying me. In terms of page 20 again.
Unfortunately, previous committee, this committee, took a decision that we will limit each other to time. So that is the unfortunate thing. And she was here. So there is unfortunately a time limit, and I think we need...
Did I exit my 5 minutes? Did I exit my 5 minutes? Did I exit my 5 minutes, Chair? Please, I'm not going to be intimidated by mob. Yes. Please, I'm not going to allow that. And I'm cautioning you. I'm cautioning you, Chair, to take a decisive decision. Every time when I speak, these people are speaking. Every time when I speak, they are speaking. I've never spoken when you are raising your
hand. Oh, no, can you listen to the question?
We are not going to derail our mission for your information. Our mission is clear.
I think there's a misapprehension by the honourable member that each person has got 5 minutes. That is not correct. We have only got an opportunity to ask clarity-seeking questions, and maybe we can assist the honourable member in that regard.
You don't have to assist me.
Not 5 minutes.
You don't have to assist me.
Please not interact with members as they are on the podium. As much as you don't want them to interact, to disturb you, but you don't have the right to interact with members. You can only address the chair. The situation here is, we have time limit. There is no way where it says every member has 5 minutes. No. We are saying the presenters have 10 minutes. We also have at least 20 minutes, all of us combined, including the presenters, to ask questions and to be responded to in those 20 minutes, all of us. So please, can you limit yourself so that other members can also get a bite?
I've never exceeded any 3 or 4 minutes. The truth hurts sometimes. That is why you are behaving the way you are behaving. And you are not going to derail us from our mission. Our mission is clear. And then say, in again on page 20, I'm not going to disrupt that. Again, on page 20, you are saying to us, people must not be fooled, I'm summarizing, by the ridiculous populist political slogan. Ridiculously populist political slogan. In brackets, land expropriation without compensation. Do you think that when people saying they want to expropriate land without compensation based on the historic injustice. That is a populist stance because this thing is said by the most vulnerable society of our country. And in your thinking, do you think that South Africa can only be sustained for as long as, in brackets, property, which is land, is in the hands of the white minority vis-a-vis black majority who doesn't have access to this land?
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukwege. Who is the next speaker? Honorable Sujan.
Do you want to reply now, Mr. Chairman?
No. Let's get the questions from one. Just note all of the questions and then respond to all of them. Honorable Sujan.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I do not intend belittling such a big problem that we have in the country in the way in which this presenter has just done. Reducing such hunger for land to the extent of saying that we must look at the Zille experience or offering or Mashaba's approach piecemeal when we're talking about millions of people who are landless. To what extent can a reasonable man compare Zimbabwe with South Africa on earth, except if a statement like that is made to insult the landless people of South Africa? You just can't compare the two. I would like to know from you, where and what else is common besides the two countries being all in Africa? What is common between Zimbabwe and South Africa that to say that South Africa is likely to go that direction if we tackle this political problem in a proper way? Your claim that mostly these mainland claims of 1998 have been settled. But as a lawyer, you should know that there's a court decision or judgment to say that stop processing the 2014 and we've got over 100,000 of them, which we got in the first 6 months. I would expect you to be knowing that as a lawyer. You suppress that information to give the false impression that there is less hunger for land in South Africa. Why do you do that? That's my second question. Why do you make a statement that suggests that there is less hunger for land? My last question is, South Africa's land ownership pattern is exceptionally skewed. It needs an exceptional approach, like no other country. Why do you keep on saying that we should not go for the exceptional way of treating an exceptionally skewed land debt or land debt ownership in South Africa? Why are you suppressing the legitimate and proper fundamental solution to a centuries-old problem? What are you trying to get this country to with that kind of approach? I want answers from you, here and now.
Thank you, Honorable Sujani. Honorable Swart.
Chair, thank you. Thank you for your presentation. As a lawyer, would you agree that Section 25, as it is presently formulated, allows for expropriation of land with reduced compensation and even in the possibility of zero compensation as it is presently formulated? And secondly, would you not suggest that a solution to the issue would be for the Constitutional Court to give the exact parameters, given the different legal interpretations that we've had on Section 25 as it is presently formulated? Secondly, the issue of referring to the Bible and Judeo-Christian faith, is the answer not in the Restitution of Land Rights Act? That is a biblical process, restitution with compensation, and one of the reasons why hasn't succeeded is due to exorbitant prices asked, secondly, incapacity, thirdly, corruption. But you indicated that most of those have been settled, but my information is in fact that it's not so, that many of them have not been settled for various reasons. is that not where one should first look at, which is the biblical basis of restitution with compensation? Thank you.
Brother Smith?
I thought you forgot me, Chair. Thank you. Sir, my colleagues all have raised it. I'm just asking it for emphasis. When you started, I thought I heard you ask the question, rhetorically maybe, why expropriate? If I'm correct in that, what alternative are you proposing to address the very skewed land ownership in this country? If you say expropriation, what must we do? Because I can tell you that everything else we've done, notwithstanding the corruption and all those things, has been very slow. So if we want to speed it up, what alternative? Everything else you talk about, skills and so on, I accept. Are you saying expropriation is a total no-no?
Thank you very much. Mr. Brian Mosley.
Yeah, my answer.
I hope you have noted all the...
Well, I've tried.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I think dealing with the first question, which relates to the Ten Commandments and coveting somebody else's property, all the arguments about what happened historically can be batted around and be sitting here for the rest of our lives talking about who did what to who, including the First Nation, who say you must consult them because we all came after them. So that argument is going to go nowhere. What we've got at the moment is a situation where we all live in this country and we all are alive. If we ever did anything to anybody who's already passed away, we cannot go to those people and claim whatever they did or did not do. We cannot restore what happened, what they might have done or did do or didn't do to each other. We are here. And we have, most people that I know of have bought their property from somebody else, so they've actually paid for it. If you take somebody and you say, listen, I'm going to take your property away and I'm going to pay you nothing, because I think, although your property is worth 500,000 rand, according to me, somebody else must get it, and they must get it for nothing, A, you will impoverish the person who's got the property in the first place, so the 500,000 rand house owner who owns his house gets taken away and given to some other person. It becomes that you're impoverishing the first person and you're benefiting the other person. So, frankly, if EWC, which was conceived by the EFF, is a non-starter in this country. It cannot work, it will never work, and it only causes problems. Okay, so that's the question of coverage.
On a point of order, Chair.
Okay, sorry.
On a point of order, Chair. Honorable Fuljana, I'm dealing with another procedural matter. Honorable Fuljana, it's wrong for you to use that language. Not acceptable. Because there is nothing in my hearing that the presenter has said. Honorable Mukwili, your point of order?
You know, Chair, ne? When presenters come, especially white people, there is a tendency... Am I protected, Chief?
Make a point of order on the bill I'm listening.
There is this tendency of them coming here and insult black people. On a very serious note. This man who is sitting here, if you can read what he has written, his submission,
please make your point of
but
order.
But you must tell her, like you tell me that I'm going to keep quiet. Tell her to keep quiet because I'm in the point of order. Please! You must tell her to keep quiet, this woman.
Honorable Mukwili, make your point of order, please.
Yes,
you need to rule and move.
I'm saying to you, Chair, this guy, what is written here and what he's saying are totally different. He's trying to be lenient, but the fact that he has written in his document is a clear indication that he is totally undermining black people.
Okay.
He wanted to do the
all
thing
right.
now, and then he corrected
yeah.
his words.
Okay.
You
right.
must tell him.
Okay.
We are not afraid of
Honorable, you. Honorable Kuri.
We are not afraid
of
you.
That's not the point of what, Honorable Kuri. It's your opinion.
We are not afraid of you, and we are going to take that
Let me take a point of order.
Without compensation.
Was it not raised or President Bank?
I'm telling you. We are going to take it,
all
whether
right.
you like it or
Let
not.
Let me a point of order. Honorable Kuri, it's wrong to use language that may be perceived to
he's,
be threatening.
He's doing the same also. He's doing the same
also. But you are an
We must confront these
you,
people
you
there.
Are,
we cannot be afraid of them forever.
You are,
we must confront
you
them.
You are a member. Honorable Mukwili. Honorable Mukwili, you please refrain doing this and remember all the rules of Parliament apply. Members, remember all the rules of Parliament apply. Those that apply in the chamber to apply in committee meetings. Just remember that in mind. And don't push to the bounds that we apply rules that normally apply in the chamber, in the committee meeting. It would be sad and embarrassing. Honorable Lothric, you wanted to
yes,
make a point of
Yes, still a point of order. You have said what I wanted to say, but there's an additional one. And Chairperson, we should realize we are here to listen to submissions and to ask questions for clarity, not to attack people we have invited to come and do submissions and then to use racial aspersions to attack people and to threaten them. We are only here, even if we don't agree, if we don't like what the presenters are saying, it is not for us to tell them they are wrong. It is their opinion and it is for us too late to deliberate on it. So could you please make that ruling that we do not attack them?
Point of order sustained. Presenters, as I said earlier, you are at liberty to make your opinion. Disagree as vehemently as you can. You are at liberty to that, and you are exercising your constitutional right, just like any other member sitting in this committee. There's no better right. Please conclude, sir.
Chairman, I want to continue. Thank you very much. I want to continue to answer the questions that have been presented to me. And I think what's important to notice is that since 2004, right through to approximately now, the number of white farmers has reduced from something like 130,000 to about 43,000. Farms are becoming larger. There are more corporate farmers because farming is an expensive exercise. What some members do not seem to appreciate is that I don't want to be a farmer. It's the last thing I want to do. I don't know any farmers at the moment. I'm simply speaking from the point of view of a financial position. But if the farmers are becoming less, more black people are acquiring farms. And this is happening across the country, whether you expropriate or not. And those people are paying for their farms. They've got money. And they've also got capital. You cannot run a farm with no capital. And in fact, if you look at what's happened in South Africa, and I will respond to this in this way, that if you look in Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, those areas which have never been under white farmers, if you look at the map says this is subsistence agriculture. So very, very many of those people don't have the facilities, they don't own the title deeds, they don't have the money to farm on a large scale. So it becomes a subsistence agriculture economy. Now if we want to turn South Africa into a subsistence agricultural economy, we're going about it the right way, exactly the right way. We say to people, there's a small piece of land, run a cow or plant some maize or whatever it is, and then what will happen? What will happen is we will all starve, or our children will starve, it happens after us. So what we've got to say to ourselves is, the country is transforming. Don't think it's not. Don't think by sitting in Parliament that the country is not transforming in favour of black people becoming farm owners. It's happening. And you don't have to interfere in it. It's happening.
Secondly,
I'll talk about farm workers. I've been saying that 1 million agricultural workers lost their livelihood on farms and are now living in towns. The responsibility for looking after them is now the municipality. Those municipalities are collapsing, ladies and gentlemen. They are collapsing. And if we had not threatened the farmers, who then said, oh, we can do with less labor because this is now a threat to our security, those people would still be on the farm. And the farmhouses would still be there. And the farmers wouldn't be breaking the farmhouses down. So what have we done? We've had a process, we've been threatened and threatened and threatened, and people have responded to that. So what I'm saying is, let's take the foot off the accelerator, let's go back and say, there is the constitution. This article, which I'm going to give you, explains exactly how land can be appropriated for
you mentioned that earlier on.
I mentioned that, yes.
Yeah.
But you, so the point
I think
is,
in the interest of time...
Yeah, but now, I must answer Mr. Swart's comment, and there's a comment about...
You only have a minute for that.
A minute for the discussion. Okay. He said that there is restitution available. I explained in my talk that there were a lot of examples, particularly in the urban space, where we need to extend housing...
One of what, sir? Thank you, sorry. Can we please move on? We're done with this matter.
I'm trying to
please.
Answer your question.
Chairman,
I just want to emphasize one last point, and it is in response to this question, and that is this. I have been accused, in this House, I have been accused by some members of taking a certain attitude. That is not what I am here for. I'm here to say that I'm in good company. I'm in company with the Governor of the Reserve Bank. I'm in company with Mr. Mumbo.
No,
I'm in company with a lot of people.
Let's not focus on you.
And to be attacked for saying, let's use the Constitution. The Constitution provides for this. If we undermine the Constitution, this is not the only part of the Constitution we're undermining. By undermining property rights in the Constitution, you will undermine
Mr.
the Constitution
Vastu,
itself.
You are done. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we take the opportunity to thank Mr. Masto for your arguments. It has enriched the process. So we thank you very much for your interest and participation. Afra, you ready?
Mr. Chairman, may I hand up the copy of this article for the committee?
The Secretariat will take it. Please, Secretariat.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Masto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Afra, are you here?
Afra. Yeah, I am here.
All right. Position yourself, Afra.
You want to share with us something? I wanted to check, but it's okay. It was only 3 days. But I would ask that our chairperson at this time, you must excuse me if you see me going out here, because honestly speaking, I can't subject myself to these other members who are so rude. And we have missed an opportunity to get answers from progressive leaders here. When Swart asked a question of which I wanted to get an answer, I couldn't, because these members were busy disturbing the presenter.
Please, members. If you feel that the presenter doesn't say what you want, leave the presenter. There are some of us that are interested. I think we sustain your point, Honorable Buteni. Phil Dunn, I'm pointing you. All right. yes, no, I was just putting your head.
Okay.
Don't do it again. Afra, what is it?
My name is Nompumelelo Kupeda. I am with Ms. Ndabezi Ntlebu-Qobo, and we are both from the Association for Rural Advancement. On behalf of the Association for Rural Advancement, we would like to thank the committee for giving us an opportunity to express our views on the question of land, and it is indeed an honor to be here. The Association for Rural Advancement is a non-governmental organization established in 1979 to assist the marginalized black people to resist forced removal. Since then, the organization has evolved and is now working towards an inclusive, gender-equipped responsible society where rights are valued, realized, protected, and is mainly focusing on farm bearers. Our view in relation to the question at hand is whether recommendations that the committee makes, or rather, our view in relation to the question at hand is that whatever recommendation the committee makes, there has to be a certain way of going about it, and our contribution are the proposals which are supported by what has been coming from the ground. The first proposal relates to the amendment of the Constitution. One of the issues with this current section is that there is no mention of the word expropriation without compensation. And in this regard, we are saying that in amending this section, it must be explicitly clear. Yes, land is indeed a form of property. However, to ensure that people's land rights are realized, protected, and they have secure tenure, we may want to look at the separation of the right to land from that of property, because for land reform to be realized, property such as jewelry and vehicles need not to be expropriated to achieve this. The high-level panel recommendations made reference to the need for multi-stakeholder structure. This panel was initiated by Parliament to review government interventions and make recommendations, and we believe that this was a good mechanism. The second proposal relates to testing the current constitution and other laws and policies for land reform. It is evident that there has been a heavy reliance on the market value when determining the amount of compensation, which is only one factor in terms of Section 25(3) of the Constitution. And there has been no application of other factors, which are current and historical use of property, its acquisition, the extent of state subsidy, and the purpose of expropriation. Therefore, it has been argued that if one had to apply all of the above factors in the subsection, one can actually arrive at zero compensation. This is because Section 25(3) talks to a just and equitable amount, and zero rand can be that amount. So our plea is that if the recommendation is to amend Section 25 of the Constitution, while that is done, Section 25 as it stands needs to be tested by applying all of these factors to see if zero compensation can be reached. A practical example would be the case of labor tenants in relation to the land that they are currently occupying, and we are of the view that in applying the above factors, one can arrive at zero compensation. The main reason is because labor tenants currently live on and use the land, and transferring it to them will not affect food security, destabilize the agricultural sector, and undermine the economy because they already occupy and use this land. Moreover, the landowner does not derive any direct benefit from that piece of land. We are therefore of the view that these are the types of occupiers that can be a test case for expropriation without compensation in the current constitution. The extension of Security of Tenure Act 3 of 1996, as well as the Labour Tenant Act 62 of 1997, form part of a process which is aimed at achieving land reform. However, as per the high-level panel findings, this process has been slow. In order to fast-track this process, some groundwork needs to be done. And if the recommendation is that this section of the Constitution be retained, then the expropriation bill must be finalized to allow for expropriation without compensation. It therefore remains clear that whether there is an amendment or not, Parliament and leaders in their respective organizations need to initiate and facilitate a process that will allow long sustainable solutions to be reached and in order to achieve land reform. In finding these long-term sustainable solutions, we are calling for a much deeper conversation on the issue. And all the processes initiated by the committee have opened up that conversation. What people need on the ground is the implementation of land reform. And for this to happen, there need to be an inclusive and constructive process. This process should encompass multi-stakeholders, which will include people on the ground themselves as they are faced with the different situations on the ground, all relevant government departments, academics, as well as experts. In conclusion, the Association for Rural Advancement is of the view that this inclusive process should pick up from where the high-level panel left off. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is your colleague maybe going to add something?
No.
What, you are okay. Okay, thank you very much. That was very progressive. Honorable Mender, Honorable Swart, Honorable Lodric, I want to pronounce your surname correctly. Lodric. Lodric. Okay. Oh, okay, all right. Honorable Kuranov. Okay, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start off by thanking the presenters for a very eloquent paper. And you make an interesting point, but I think it's only the first time that we received that in this form. The pages are not marked, but it would be page 5. The one where you've got the different options, the one where you say in this instance no compensation, and then the second instance partial compensation under certain circumstances, and then the third component would be full market compensation. So that's a very interesting notion that we haven't seen. What I want to ask was, in the last one where you say full compensation can be paid, you start off by saying it was acquired after 27 April 1997. I'm not sure about the date. Why 1997, or are you referring to the election, the first election of 1994? I'm not sure about that date. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and again, thank you very much for a very helpful submission. You've dealt with a number of issues which are, and you've made various proposals. What I'd like you just to reaffirm is one of your proposals is a test case for expropriation without compensation. And myself as a lawyer, and I presume you've also as a lawyer or as a doctor, that could be an answer because of the uncertainty around the application of Section 25 as it is at the moment, that a test case should be brought to the Constitutional Court to lay the parameters, and then there's no doubt on as to how it should be applied. That's the first. I'd ask you whether you'd be supportive of that. Secondly, you mentioned various options, one of which is on your proposals, the testing of the current constitution. That would be in the form of a test case, but you also refer to the high-level panel, which has been mentioned by many submitters. And here you say, you quote from, the panel is of the view that the government has not used the powers it already has to expropriate land for land reform purposes effectively, nor use the provisions of the Constitution that allow compensation below market value, rather than recommend, and then the panel says that the government should use its expropriation powers under Section 25 as it is. So are you supportive of that view, or is it purely one of your proposals? And then lastly, the issue of your proposal going forward is of further discussions, a much deeper discussion. This is, and I agree with you, a very complex issue. It's a very emotional issue, and I would like you just to unpack, as the Association for Rural Advancement, how you would see the process going forward, given the high emotions around it, and given the need for nation building, for justice and restitution, but at the same time, for nation building, for reconciliation, and for peacemaking in our nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question also relates to the test case, and also perhaps just, I think, linking to what the Honourable Swart said, is the time or the chronology that are you in favour of the test case first being heard and then we have that deep discussion, or exactly how do you see the process, how would you like to see the process? And then just a question on, you refer to the transfer of land to tenants. That transfer of land, what would be the form of the transfer? Would that be full ownership with title deed on that particular land? Thank you.
Yes, thanks very much, Chair. A really challenging presentation, intellectually, so to speak. And hence I've got this question. Young as it does, that's the presentation from youngish people. On paragraph 3 proposals, you say another option would be the separation of land from the right to property. This is so that the right to land, which is a national priority, give rise to equitable access and redress. Health suggestion is an option. Right. Now, question is, who must retain permanent ownership of the land if you separate land reform from the right to property? Noting that you've chosen a very strong word, right to property, but you say don't own it, rather take a subservient option. Not owning it, just put your land report, if I understand your suggestion well. Who must remain the owner of the land? Secondly, who must take the subservient option of rights? Like someone who has got to take, who has got to be a lessee. Who is supposed to do that, given the context of the motion that we are busy with in Parliament, which is what we have offered to come and make a contribution to. Who? We're talking about people who have got land, and we're talking about the landless. That's the foundation of what we are talking about here. Who are these people that we have got in mind who must not own land, but rather take a less than ownership? Would that option really stabilize the situation, given the land grabs, which have now even spilled over to rural areas? Where I come from, there are people who have started attacking people's millfields in large numbers. They come out of town, they just occupy, and they say, we're here to stay. It's happening less than 6 kilometers from my rural village. Come out of Barawas, and they're just attacking. Now, who are these people who must not have real rights in land in South Africa? You must have picked up some people that you propose should be denied permanently. And would that stabilize the South African situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I shall be short. Thank you for the presentation. In your presentation, you rely heavily on the high-level panel report. But when I go to the proposals, You are in favor of amending the Constitution. Am I correct to assume that you are in favor of amending the Constitution, Section 25, specifically to have more clarity?
Association for Rural Advancement. Respond to the members.
In reference to the second question, where we say that there needs to be a test case, It is clear that there is no clarity as to whether market value is the only option or not. So when this test case is being applied, it can either be before these processes or after. There has to be a clarity to confirm whether indeed Section 25 is not an impediment to achieving land reform.
I was just asking you to project properly on the mic. We can't hear properly.
Further, this particular section has caused a lot of debates. So in order to get that clarity, we are calling for a test case, and we are of the view that labor tenants who currently occupy the land are good for that test case.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the question. If I may respond to question number one, I think it made reference to three different categories in terms of landowners as the situation currently is, and it's in relation to the compensation regarding expropriation. One of the categories is the no compensation, the other one is partial compensation, and the third one is full compensation. We believe that in terms of the occupation of land by people who are not owners at the moment, if we test the current property section, which is section 25, there are categories of people that, there are categories of farm owners that will not be, that will not get compensation, and I think the reference we're making here is in relation to farm dwellers or labor tenants. They are currently occupying the land, they are using it for different land use purposes, and farmers are not getting any they are not getting any profit as they are not using that land for agricultural purposes. So our belief is that when land that is occupied by labor tenants is transferred to labor tenants, there will not be any compensation expected to be paid. The partial compensation, I think this relates to the categories that are also outlined in the Constitution. I think it's Section 25(3), if I'm not mistaken, where they talk of different elements that need to be considered in terms of paying compensation. When we look at those elements, some of the elements will warrant that partial compensation be paid. Maybe if I can make a reference, in cases where we look at history of ownership, owners did not get land in the same way. Land owners did not get land in the same way. So some of them will not be will get partial compensation and others will not, and others will get full compensation. So if we apply those elements, all of them, I think that's what we are saying can be realized, that some will have compensation, some will not have compensation, and others it will be full or partial. And in terms of the test case, as my colleague has indicated, we are saying labor tenants can be a test case currently. And we are also proposing that while the process of amending the Constitution is initiated, if that is what is going to eventually happen, let us at the same time test the current section as it stands. Because our belief is that expropriation without compensation can be achieved with the current Constitution. So let us test that while we are amending the Constitution, if that is what is eventually going to be happening. And in terms of the process, as to how we see the process unfolding, we're not sure as to what will be required in terms of ensuring that that process is initiated. But we are, I think that's the proposal we are making, and whatever processes that need to be in place before the test case is put before court, let's engage around those processes and then take the test case on. In terms of question number four, which I think talks about the separation of land from other property, I think what we are drawing attention to here is that if we talk of property, that's very general, and land is part of property. And since we are focusing on land in this discussion, I think that's what we may be emphasizing, that let's separate property, which is land, from other property, because that is what we are currently focusing on, and maybe if we talk of expropriation, we're only focusing on expropriation of land and not other forms of property. I think there was also a question in terms of, maybe the message that was received from what we were saying is that we are saying there are people who should get full ownership and others should not get full ownership. In terms of transferring land to landed people, I think people have been through a lot in terms of challenges relating to land, and particularly people who are living on farms, they have been there's a lot of challenges that they have been through, and for them secured tenure is only transfer in terms of a title deed. If they have a title deed, that's only then that they will feel that they are secured. So what we are saying is that full transfer of ownership to people who are landless at the moment, that's what we are advocating for. We are not saying that some should have full ownership and others not.
Mr. Swart, there was a specific question, I think, I don't know if it's to you or it's, or Mr. Menzer, on the time factor. Like.
Yeah. Can I just go back to that here for a second? The colleague referred to the three different categories, it's on page 5. And then the third one says, in these circumstances, land where full market compensation can be paid. And it says in the first line, it was acquired after 27 April 1997. I want to ascertain why 1997, is it maybe a typo? The 27 April to me indicates maybe 1994. I'm not sure why 1997. Can you just assist, please?
Okay, thank you very much for the question. Yes, I think it was just a typo we were referring to. Yes. Thank you.
Can I just, my assumption, you know why I'm doing this, you still have a bit of time. My assumption that you are not against the change of Section 25 for clarity. Is that correct? You haven't replied.
Our key message is that in order to find answers to land reform, much deeper conversations need to be held. And a situation where the amendment, or rather a recommendation, is taken that this section be amended or it is not amended. Whatever decision that is taken will not resolve the current situation, because in one of the high-level panel recommendations, or what we have experienced from the ground, is that the problems are much deeper than that. Hence, we are calling for a multi-stakeholder engagement that will be given And this multi-stakeholder engagement would include the people on the ground. Because as forgotten as they are the ones who hold the answers. We cannot say that we are certain that they want title or they want to be future farmers. But if they are involved in these processes at grassroots level, such as the high-level panel processes, then...
So, I think you have made your point.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you very much for making your time to come in and reach us with your ideas. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. We'll be getting now a presentation from Johannesburg Attorneys Association. Are they here? Yeah, when you're ready, Johannesburg Attorneys Association. Are you ready, guys?
Yeah,
okay, you can go.
How's that? Thank you. Excellent. Thank you very much for having us here today. I'm briefed on behalf of the Johannesburg Attorney Association. I'll tell you briefly what the organization is about. They're the largest voluntary organization to represent attorneys in Johannesburg and represent over 2,500 members of all races. And our submission will deal with a number of points. Firstly, we want to emphasize that as lawyers, we care deeply about justice. And one of the most important parts of justice is restoring past wrongs. And so we emphasize this importance of land restitution, the idea that if your land was stolen from you, it ought to be restored to you, and that any just society must have a compensatory mechanism in place to ensure that the justice of the past are righted. So that is our starting point. We will then turn to look at the scope of the inquiry before this committee and what powers it has to recommend any possible changes to the Constitution. We will then briefly discuss what the international law is on the area of expropriation without compensation. And we'll raise a number of concerns that may be present if the Constitution were to be amended, and then finally end with a couple of solutions. So firstly, with regard to the scope of the inquiry, this committee has done a tour of the country and asked the public and a number of organizations to present submissions for a narrow question. That narrow question is, should the Constitution be changed to allow for the expropriation of land without compensation? Now, Section 25 of our Constitution deals with a much broader category being property. This means that no recommendation could be made to change anything in the property clause of the Constitution that would interfere with any property rights whatsoever, except for land, because of the narrowness of this inquiry. With regards to international law, so South Africa was a founding member of the United Nations, and there are a number of different treaties in place and in customary international law which deal with this question of what powers states have to expropriate land. Now, firstly, expropriation is one of those things that is going to be necessary for states to use. In other words, if you're going to engage in building public infrastructure, something like a Caltrain project or building roads, it will often be necessary to go through privately held land, and a seller may not want to sell, and therefore the state will have to expropriate. What international law says is that you must pay adequate compensation. Now, if we removed a requirement of compensation in our constitution, in other words, if no compensation was offered for the case of land, this would be a flouting of international law. So these are the two sort of concerns that we have. So with regards to some of the other concerns that must be taken into account, the first is with regards to how much money has been dedicated towards this process of land reform and land restitution. So if we look at the most recent budget, we see that only 0.3% of the budget has been dedicated towards this important process of land reform. The amount is roughly 5.6 billion rand, which is basically a rounding error when we look at the entirety of the budget, which is roughly 1.3 trillion rand. So if this is a concern for South Africans, and you know, this is the hottest issue in public discourse at the moment, then it is incumbent upon government to dedicate the correct amount of resources to it. In other words, the way to solve this problem is to ensure that those people who have had their land taken away from them are given adequate compensation, and that those people that need adequate housing are addressed in that regard. And one way to do that is to increase the budget. The other thing that must be taken into account is the real interests of South Africans. So if we look at polling that has been done by the South African Institute for Race Relations, we see that when South Africans are asked what are the major issues for you, what are your primary concerns, first of all, they list unemployment. That figure of concern is close to 40%. Then it's service delivery at around 33%. You know, access to water, access to basic shelter. Right at the bottom is land redistribution, which comes in a latest survey at 2%. So we know that when we're looking at the hierarchy of issues, when we need to prioritize things, that this does come towards the bottom of people's needs. So that must be taken into account before something so drastic as changing the Bill of Rights occurs. You must remember that in the entire history of our Constitution, which has been amended 17 times, the Bill of Rights has never been amended. The Bill of Rights is one of the most sacred portions of our Constitution, and I think we ought to have enormous pause before amending the Bill of Rights, especially when there are other measures that can be done. Next, I think we must, while recognizing that restitution is important, the mechanism that's used to do that restitution matters enormously. And we must bear in mind the needs of all South Africans and the damage that can be done by using certain mechanisms. So the concern with expropriating property without compensation is that you undermine a very important right. And if we look at the economic devastation that has occurred around the world from states that have tried this before, you know, we find that it's not only to those that held land, it's to the entire population. So if we look at what's happened to our neighbor in the north, in Zimbabwe, if we look at what's happened in Venezuela, you know, we see in Venezuela, for example, that, you know, one of the most prosperous countries in South America has been, you know, rendered a basket case, that people are fleeing the country in droves. Give you an example of this. There's a famous picture of police arresting someone who's got these white bags of powder on him. And you say, oh, in South America, it must be bags of cocaine. Actually, he's being arrested because he has bags of flour. And the state says, you cannot use this flour for your own purposes. This is state flour. You cannot bake your own bread. And they have mass starvation in Venezuela because they have so dramatically interfered with property rights there. So the signal that will be sent to the international community as well as one is, you know, as an international investor, you can invest in any part of the world. You don't have to pick South Africa. And someone that acts in their own self-interest would want to invest in a country where their land rights are secure. So as much as there is a noble end here, which is to ensure that there is, you know, great access to land and that those that have had their land stolen from them are properly compensated, the mechanism may be much, much worse. We don't want medicine that's worse than the poison. We must also recognize that farming is a highly technical job. That government, in a recent case, bought up 264 farms in the Eastern Cape for the purpose of redistribution towards new farmers. And only 26 of those farms are still fully functioning, so 10%, which means a 90% failure rate. You know, if you're going to have redress, if you're going to hand people land, you need to do so in a manner which is sustainable. You know, farming is sort of become a much more scientific process over time. That must be recognized, that if what you want is sustainable development, handing over the land is insufficient for that. You know, you require their own expertise and have access to resources. So with regards to solutions, what we can look at is what has been done thus far. So between 1995 and 2014, 1.8 million individuals have received compensation for land that was taken from them in the land claims court process. 1.8 million individuals is a large number. And we know that 92% of those individuals elected to take money instead of land. And one of the reasons is because money is fungible. Money is freedom. Money means that you're not stuck in a rural area having to learn how to farm. You can use that money to start a business, to pay for your debts, to invest. So that's important. And this is a solution that can be used for remaining claims, which is to use the existing land claims process. The other thing that many other people have said is that you ought to be conferring title. So those people that have been occupying land for a long period of time with the uncertainty of whether they'll be able to remain there should be granted title deeds. The importance of title is that it's transferable. You can borrow against it. You know, so we need to have more security of title over land as opposed to less. The other thing is to use the current constitutional powers that are in place in Section 25. So we know from the case law that the first point that you look at is what the market value of the land is. But then you can deviate up and down based on the other powers. So for example, the history of acquisition is one of those things that's currently mentioned in our Constitution. So if you have land that was taken by the barrel of a gun, that is going to be a very good reason for reducing compensation, possibly down to zero rands. You can also look at the purpose of the expropriation. If the purpose of the expropriation is to benefit people that are in need of land, that's going to play a role in determining what price is ultimately paid. And finally, that the use of the property is also going to play a value in the price. So I would say that the Constitution in its current form provides ample powers to government, and that must be taken into account. Before I conclude, just as a matter of how to engage with questions, we are very happy to engage with questions. I would just ask if it's possible for them to be on a one-to-one basis so that I can answer each one coherently as opposed to taking a round of questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we cannot grant you a different approach to other presenters. So you just have to bear with us. Yes. Members, Honorable Swart, Honorable Rodrigue, Honorable Mukwele, Honorable Fildani, and lastly, Honorable Smith. In that order, please.
Thank you. Thank you for the helpful submission. I would just like to ask you, in view of the possible breaches of our international law,
obligations where you mentioned the owner shall be paid appropriate compensation in terms of the resolution of permanent sovereignty over natural resources of the United Nations. Should we be in breach of our international obligations, can economic sanctions be applied to a member state in such circumstances? That's the first question. Secondly, in view of your submission, you indicate that Section 25, as it is presently formulated, you say there will be situations where no compensation is due after expropriation. Is that your is that your position? And in other words, are you supporting? So are you saying that it's necessary to amend the Constitution or not necessary? That's the second issue. And then, because you are also as lawyers, you've had various lawyers that are saying that it is necessary to amend the Constitution for clarity's sake, would you not suggest that a constitutional court test case be brought to give clarity as to the parameters of Section 25 as it presently stands, given the doubt that exists and some members of the committee are saying we need to amend the Constitution to bring clarity? Would that not be an easier step to go to court and let the court give clarity so everybody knows what the position is? Thank you so much.
There are three questions there, if it's available for me to answer the three, because they are reasonably complicated.
One is the veterans. You are going to listen to all of the questions. Please note what they are saying and then respond.
Could I just remind the presenter that if there's not enough time, you can supplement.
You can also
supplement in writing if necessary as well.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, we'll also look at it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. I also want to ask a question on the international law. You just say that we would be flouting international law if adequate compensation is not paid. Could you just expand a bit more on your understanding of, in terms of international law, what adequate would be vis-a-vis just an equitable compensation as is foreseen within the Constitution, and what you would think would happen within the international context should we make the case that it could be zero?
Thank you very much, Chair. In your presentation, page 5 of it, under section reason not to amend the Constitution, you did mention that the country has a dark history of land theft. In your case as a lawyer, how do you deal with something that was stolen? Do you normally buy a stolen property, or how do you deal with it? If I come to your court and then I accuse Honorable Chair for stealing my pen, Honorable Uyumi, for stealing my pen, do I have to compensate him for doing that, for stealing my property? And again, in your presentation, I think I just received your presentation, I just browsed through it. But I think, in page 6 of it, you did mention of failed programs of expropriation of land. Of which, according, if we have time, I will tell you that those projects, they didn't fail. It is the system that made them to fail. Now, why always you do mention Zimbabwe and Venezuela, but you don't tell us about the positive projects? Like, for example, Mozambique. Why do you always mention those ones? Do you have an intention of misleading the country or misleading the world that if ever the expropriate, the amendment of the constitution will happen in the in South Africa, it means will be as Venezuela and as Mozambique, rather Zimbabwe. Thirdly, you did mention that 92% of people that were compensated during the land redistribution decided to take cash. In your analysis, as the status quo of the country, how can you give a legal perspective to that? Why these poor people decided to take cash? One, is it because they took cash because of the poverty-stricken environment that they are living in? Two, did they took cash because the environment couldn't enable them to do whatever activity that they can do, be it in the land that were given to them, like to farm or to build property for selling or to do any other thing? Don't you think that the environment didn't enable them to do that? Three, you said the last question. The last question, but I must ask him questions. Last question.
You're not being oppressed.
You are wasting time yourself. I'm asking him according to the thing. Last question that I want to ask you is that you did mention that our people are moving from the poor rural areas. Let me tell you, our areas, our villages are not poor, are very rich. The reason why they move from where they were relocated by the Group Areas Act is because they are moving because they were put on a barren land. That is why they are moving to towns. And the reason why they see towns as a better place is because of the apartheid spatial development plan. So as a legal person, how then are you going to make sure, or are you going to advise Parliament when we take our decision to deal with this matter? Last question. I want to check your affiliation. You said you are representing plus minus 1,200 members. Can you, whatever number. In terms of race, can you analyze to us, can you tell us how many black people are in your association and how many, not necessarily in numbers, you can make a rough estimate of percentage and how many whites?
Thank you, Chair. Does international law override our constitution? That's my first question, simple as all of us. Such that we would sacrifice complying with our constitution just so that we honor an international agreement. That's the purpose of the question. Second one is, would you agree with me, we're talking about the context of budgets, which you said is very, very small. Would you agree with me that you're looking at this budget only and exclusively from the perspective of land acquisition as well as land reform, that is programs that help people, as different from the right to own land, pure restitution without paying anything? So you're looking at it purely from saying, to purchase so much land, your budget as government is too small. You're not looking at it from the perspective of advancing pure cause of restitution, which could require zero budget.
That's why I want to, I'm asking you whether you would agree with me that it's because you don't get the precious Christ. Thirdly, you're talking about the fact that property ownership is undermined. Now, you probably know that there's very few people who own large amounts of land and many people who own very little or no land at all. Now, would you agree with me when I say that this is a totally selfish protection of the minority right or right to own land vis-a-vis the grand or necessary ownership of land by the majority of South Africans? Would you agree with me that you're just looking at it from the perspective of the few who own land? Understanding, because you went further to say this has got a negative impact on the economy, understanding that the economy is driven or is influenced to a large extent by an asset known as land. In other words, whichever way, it has got consequences. Lastly, Chair, very brief one. Very, very brief. Thank you, Chair. Has it ever occurred to you that one of the reasons why people choose cash over land when it comes to restitution is because of a deeply eroded culture of cultivating land, something that stretches for centuries? Has it ever occurred to you that that could be one of the reasons, or is that simplifying such a fundamentally deep wound that people have lost the culture of cultivating as they opt for cash?
Thank you, Honorable President. I think Honorable Mukwilo will also post on that particular question. I understand.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start on that one with another different version as well. Sir, you know, you on page 5, although it's not marked, you talk about the 92% that choose cash, and you make a bold statement. This shouldn't come as much of a surprise because money translates to freedom. I would argue that that is absolutely not true. The entire struggle in this country for freedom was about land. That's the point that I'm making. That it was about land, it was not about money. And secondly, sir, I think the real reason why we are asking about access to land is about the dignity. When we went around the country, people spoke about their dignity. So don't reduce this exercise to money, because money can never buy the dignity of many farm workers who can't bury or whose ancestors' burial places have been taken by mines. So don't reduce it to freedom. That's the first point that I'm making. The second point, sir, the gentleman that is just sitting down there now, is a retired attorney, I think, from the High Court. And he came to say to us a few minutes ago that, you see, you don't need to change the constitution because Mashaba in Johannesburg is expropriating and everybody else. You come to us and you say to us to do that will flout international law. So are you suggesting to us that Mashaba and Zilla are flouting international law? Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Wusu. Mr. Wusu. We are done with you. Done. Can you respond?
Yes, okay. So let's look at this question around dignity and freedom. So I think one of the advantages of money is that it can be used to purchase land, but it can be used to purchase any number of things. So in other words, it is a more fungible asset class than land. So in other words, if someone says, I want land, they may not want land in the middle of the Northern Cape. They may want land in a place they're choosing. And so one of the reasons why people have chosen, as I say, 92% of cases, money instead of a particular piece of land is because it gives them that freedom to pick whatever they want. And it may be that they would like land, they just want it somewhere else. You raise another important point, which is that sometimes that specific land really matters because, as you say, there's a burial ground there or there's some other intimate connection with that particular piece of land. And I think as far as possible in the restitution process, that land should be restored to that person. But when we look at this question of dignity, it cuts across both lines. In other words, if we have someone who legitimately owns land, and the state takes it from them without paying them anything for it, there has been an invasion of their dignity. And this will cut across color lines. So if the recommended change is to cohere with the rest of our constitution, bear in mind that section 1 of our constitution says that South Africa is a nation founded on the value of non-racialism, that any change to the constitution will then be done in a non-racial manner. What it does is that it jeopardizes rich people, poor people, black people, and white people. In other words, all of them will be endangered by the state. All of them can have their land taken from them with no compensation. With regards to when you could pay a zero compensation, and in our submission we say that the current constitution allows for the payment of zero compensation in some cases. So, for example, the Mashaba powers in the city. So what we know is that the starting point is what is the market value, and then you can adjust up or down. So for example, you may have something that has no market value, given the size of the land or the location of the land. In other words, in that case, just on that factor alone, you could pay zero. You may also find that the nature in which it was acquired, so for example, a case was given of the land, if a piece of the land was directly stolen, well, then I think you have all the reason in the world to pay zero compensation. If someone directly stole something from you, you don't compensate them for it. But this is a point that I think needs to be elaborated on properly. So if we have the case that was illustrated, which is that property is stolen by someone, you can identify who it was, then they must return it, and they must not receive any compensation whatsoever. But if we have a different case, so I'll go through a couple of different degrees of complexity. And also, we must bear in mind that South Africa can look abroad to other countries who have to deal with this problem. So, for example, Germany engages in a compensation process for land that was stolen from Jews by Nazis. And we know that they say, if you were a direct thief, in other words, if you were a Nazi, we're not going to pay you anything. That would be unjust to pay anything. We're going to restore the property without compensation. That's just, and our constitution allows that. However, it gets more complicated if you are someone who purchased that property many degrees down the line. So in other words, you had no knowledge of the theft. Maybe you even bought a portion of it and it was retransferred. You are an innocent bystander. Now I think it's important as well when we look at this case that we don't say, well, you look like a perpetrator and you look like a victim because of your race, and therefore the transfer should be done on that basis. In other words, we cannot make these broad claims that white people stole the land and black people must be the beneficiaries. What we must look at is individuals that stole the land and individuals that were stolen from, and justice must be done between those two sets of people. So the idea that we could say that all people who have a particular level of melanin in their skin are equally vicious and equally land thieves, well, that goes against what our constitution demands, which is this value of non-racialism. So, for example, there's going to be an enormous amount of difference between people in this country who, you know, fled Nazis, like my grandparents who came to this country in 1933 with the clothes on their back, you know, people who have arrived in this country from various different parts of the world, with, you know, pray to different gods, speak different languages, all who happen to have the same level of melanin. To clump them together as land thieves would be inappropriate. With regard to, as I said, this idea of minority protection, well, we ought to care...
Or a point of privilege, whatever order of privilege that I don't know whether it will be a privilege or it will be a... No. I want to check with the presenter when he's presenting. He alluded that when they deal with the case of theft, there is a process that they follow. Now, in this case, there is a property that was stolen from the majority of people, and there is evidence to that, to say plot 175, I'm giving an example. These are the beneficiaries of this plot. It affects Renalini, Marbika, and other things that is in that plot. It was taken, when you follow the history, people will give you how was it taken. And then when he gives a narrative to say people bought land, we can still argue, Chair, that everybody who came looking the same as he looks to South Africa, he never brought any land to him. So those ones are the ones that are regarded as land thieves.
I don't think it would be fair to engage on that issue because it appears to be a point of debate. And the gentleman from the Johannesburg Attorneys is trying to respond to questions from members. And whatever that point was, let's pack it and give the gentleman opportunity.
I'll turn to some of the questions regarding international law. So, as I say, what we have is a situation which is that all states are granted the power to expropriate. And in terms of international law, the question is that you must pay appropriate compensation. Now, states are given some latitude to determine what appropriate compensation is, and our state, for example, has set that out in our constitution. So we know how this process will be done, and that there is a fact-finding mission in regards to each particular case, and you work out, you know, what is this worth, how is it acquired, what is it going to be used for. We also, our courts, make use of a thing called the Pont-Gourde principle, which is the idea that, you know, if you have the state seeking to expropriate land from a landowner, that what they could do is say, well, let me drive up the price dramatically because I know the state wants this. And so they artificially inflate it because of artificial demand. And the Pont-Gourde principle says, no, you can't do that. And we must look at the value of the land aside from the question of whether we're expropriating or not. So you look at the ordinary market value. And then again, you can use all these other factors, which are good, just factors, to determine whether compensation will be due. So in the case, for example, which Michelle has talked about, is this idea of looking at inner city buildings that have been abandoned. One way in which you pay zero rents in compensation is to use the Constitution. So to say, well, is there any debt owned on this building? So if you had a building that's been abandoned in the inner city for 20 years, it may be that the rate owned on that building outstrip its value, in which case the state can expropriate and pay zero compensation because it is owed more than the value of the land. So doing so in such an instance would be appropriate compensation and would not be a flouting of international law. However, if there is a piece of land that is valuable, that was justly acquired, then to pay zero compensation in that instance would not be just and equitable in terms of our constitution. It would not be appropriate in terms of international law. That person is innocent. Their dignity would be impinged upon by the state if their land was taken and they were given nothing for it. It would ultimately amount to some sort of state-sanctioned theft. And we know, as I've alluded to, that we have this dark history of land theft in this country for a very long time, and that the law has been used as a weapon against citizens to take their land. It has been used as a weapon against poor, vulnerable black citizens for a long time. We look at the Group Areas Act, we know that that was a complete injustice. People were wrongly deprived of their land. And what we need to do as Africans is say, never again shall the poor and the vulnerable be subject to the demands of the state and for the law to be utilized against them to perpetrate further injustice. It's important that the law is used in a just manner. Now, on this point as well, I think it's important that when drafting the law, we must bear in mind that positions of power change over time. So, for example, in America, Republicans and Democrats change office on a very frequent basis. And they always bear in mind that the remedies that they craft in law are like weapons which can be used against them by their opponents across the aisle. And of course, this must be borne in mind by all parliamentarians. But if the Constitution has changed, if the Bill of Rights has changed for the first time ever to allow for expropriation without compensation, there is no guarantee that in the future, even if now those that make that change have very just ends in mind, that it will be done so in the future.
Can you maybe, in the interest of time, just wrap up in a minute? Just wrap up maybe in a minute, because I think we are doing very bad for time.
Yes.
And as indicated earlier, if there are other further submissions that you want, we can always do that again. Just let me just give you a minute for wrap up.
I appreciate that. So I will say that there is this concern that if a change is made, it will be utilised as a weapon against those that want to use it for good, and that is something that must be borne in mind. We do know that South Africa is governed by a multiple range of different political parties who may use it in all sorts of ways. It will not always be the noble that expropriates. They may use it as a weapon to punish people who don't share their political views or their ethnic backgrounds. That must be borne in mind. With regard to the concerns about breaching international law, well, what we may have is a situation of South Africa being taken to international tribunals if land is taken without appropriate compensation, so there will be those sanctions. There may also be a pariah status attached to the country, which South Africa has had before in the eyes of the international community, and we would not like that again. So you may have a situation where we are cut out from the international community because we are not respecting international law, and that is something to be avoided. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that you took your time to come and enrich us with your deliberations. Thank you so much. Members, I think the last presentation for the day will be from the Center for Development and Enterprise. I hope that is the correct title. Center for Development and Enterprise. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
You are alone. Okay. Are you alone? Okay.
Hello. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and honourable members, for the opportunity to address you. I think you've probably had your fill of lawyers and bankers, and I know you have spent a lot of time listening to frustrated South Africans with our land reform program. I come to you as a development organization and a development expert, and that's the perspective from which I will try and make a contribution today. So South Africa is a country with 50% of its population living in poverty, with probably the deepest unemployment crisis of any country that we know of. Some 860 people join the queues of unemployed every single day. And we're a country with tremendous inequality. And this is the backdrop to the hearings you have and what you are trying to do. I'm going to make four big points. The first concerns the Centre for Development and Enterprise, which I lead, and our commitment to land reform. In our view, South Africa must deal with the historical injustices around land, and we need to do this in a way that improves the lives of rural people who have been so badly served for so long. As an organization, we are energetically engaging with the private sector to understand and enhance their contribution to land reform in this country. And we are certainly willing and eager to help South Africa succeed in this difficult area. It's easy to attack the government for its lack of success, and they should certainly be held accountable in this area. But I think it's also important to appreciate what a difficult task of coordination, competing rights, technical expertise, and many other dimensions are involved in land reform in any country. Now in 2005, 13 years ago, we started doing work on land reform in South Africa. And for the next 4 years, we devoted ourselves almost entirely to understanding what was happening in the country, what was preventing success, the nature of government policy and capacity, and how the private sector could play a greater role in helping the country to deliver on land reform. This process culminated in 2008 with a major set of recommendations delivered on behalf of business leaders to the President and the Big Business Working Group, to the head of the policy in the presidency, and with his help to the key directors general throughout the government. Unfortunately, the recommendations we made, which were a stretch for the private sector at the time, were not implemented by the new government that came in 2009. The second point I want to make is that South Africa's failure to implement a successful land reform program has nothing at all to do with the Constitution. Land reform is struggling in South Africa for a number of reasons. Some land was transferred through the redistribution program, but that is mainly ground to a halt now. Some land has been bought by black South Africans through the market. It's hard to know the scale of this, but that has been increasing. The restitution program has helped some communities get their land back and given cash to many others through their choice, I might add, but through bad management and policy choices, this area of restitution has now become an enormous and unmanageable situation that needs urgent intervention, else it will take decades and decades to resolve. The important issue of tenure reform has essentially failed to make any real progress. By far the largest contribution to these challenges that we face have been the long delays, the inefficiencies created by lack of capacity, sometimes lack of commitment to the task at hand, and unfortunately increasingly growing corruption within the bureaucracy. It's an uncomfortable reality that state capacity is exceptionally weak with respect to all the skills and competence required with respect to land reform, from buying land successfully and not at inflated prices, to providing support to new farmers, to choosing private sector consultants who are not themselves crooks. The lack of support for new farmers means that at least half of the current land reform beneficiaries have not been made better off after receiving land. And all these problems are compounded by the collapse and dysfunction of many local governments across South Africa. In all of this, we would argue it is not the Constitution that is holding back the progress of land reform. Former Justice Albie Sachs has put forward his firm view that the Constitution does not prevent accelerated land redistribution. Far from being a barrier to radical land redistribution, the Constitution in fact requires and facilitates extensive and progressive programs of land reform. It provides for constitutional and judicial control to ensure equitable access and prevent abuse. The third point I want to make. In South Africa today, successful land reform cannot be achieved without the participation of existing commercial farmers. Because of our history, like it or not, the most potent source of capacity, of know-how, and ability to get things done in rural South Africa resides in commercial agriculture. And a range of private sector participants, from large and medium-sized farmers to big farming companies and some specially created private sector organizations devoted to land reform, have over the past 10 to 15 years made a contribution and developed expertise in identifying and then working with new black farmers to access land, to get established, and start to succeed in different sectors of the agricultural economy. So they are already involved in land reform, and many, obviously not all, but very many are willing to donate land and be part of ensuring the success of new or newly commercial farmers. Undermining property rights through an amendment to the Constitution will put an immediate halt to this important and positive dynamic. So if we want successful land reform where beneficiaries are better off afterwards, and if we want rapid and steady expansion of black participation as owners, as managers, as producers in commercial agriculture, it is absolutely vital not to destabilize these commercial farmers and their organizations through a mass program of expropriation. My fourth point, sir. Land reform needs to be seen in a broader context. Land reform can be an important part of, but should not be confused with, a rural development strategy for South Africa today. This country has never had a properly conceived rural development strategy. We've done terrible things to rural people at different times, consistently in our history until 1994, but we have never thought seriously about what is the role of rural South Africa in the 21st century. The second point about context is that we are an urbanizing society. We are already around 70% urbanized. And most South Africans, from all the evidence we have, most South Africans do not want to farm, but they do need a secure place to stay. These are different things. So in our view, we have to turn much more attention in this society to how we manage our cities, to dramatically expand opportunities for poorer people and those migrating into the cities, so that we create places of hope for everybody. Urban land reform is a key part of urban management. There's much to be done here. And the society and government should spend much more time thinking about this, how to provide secure tenure, access to housing, without expanding the apartheid city with all its disadvantages. And again here, the role of the private sector is absolutely critical as a partner with the public sector in order to help fund and develop housing and urban development. So let me conclude, Mr. Chairman. In our view, South Africa needs increased investment in agriculture in our cities and across the country. This can only happen if the private sector is incentivized to invest. It's important to note that some of the most important of our four investment ambassadors...
Actually, you are
2 seconds, sir. Our investment ambassadors have noted the difficulty of attracting investment domestically and overseas if property rights are on the table and a constitutional amendment is being thought of.
Thank you. Members, there you have the presentation. Can we engage? Honorable Gwili, Honorable Filtan, Honorable Pierre, the Honorable Swan. Honorable Smith, sorry. Honorable Gwili.
Thank you, sir. Page 2 of your presentation. You said the President has subsequently reiterated that land reform would unfold within a clear legal framework and would not affect economic growth. So I want to check with you. If he said so, what will then, if we amend the Constitution to allow expropriation of land without compensation affect economic growth, because
The reason why I'm saying this is because land is not needed only for economy. And then in your page 3 again, bulletin number 2, recipients of land that is expropriated without compensation may not be able to benefit from the value of the land that they receive. Why are you saying that? Why are you saying they won't benefit? What is land in your opinion? Is land a object that is only used for economy, or is land a dignity? Another issue, you said you engage with private companies or private institutions. So what made you think that if we want our land, because we have never engaged with those communities that were dispossessed of their land, what then made you think that the only thing that we want to use land is for only for agricultural purposes? And there is a, I'm trying to be on time so that I cannot be hold. There is another point where you said there is evidence that most rural South Africans do not want to become farmers. The vast majority of people want a secure place to stay and access to employment. The nature, location, and volume of land hunger, let me leave that. So in your mind, right, you think that the dispossessed, the only thing that they can think of is to work. There's nothing beyond employment. We cannot have access to land because we are lazy in thinking. And if we access this land as the majority, the economy will be affected. Now, in your thinking capacity, because you have made it clear that you have never engaged with the people, you only engage with private sector. People will only need a place to stay. Stereotype after stay, they go to town, they go to M&M or bus and work and go home. That is what you think of us. You don't think any other thing that is better than that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My understanding of economy, I've never done economics, but my understanding of economy is that it's got two sides that drive it. Supplier and the consumer. And that's my point of departure. Now, talking about incentivizing, the private sector, I immediately thought of the wonderful growth that our economy would enjoy if more people had more land on which building could take place. Compare a house in any suburb in South Africa, the size of that house, with the size of a shack. And can you imagine the labor that is involved in building a house, the amount of material, the consumption of materials, the labor, and so on. But because millions of people have got no land, they single-handedly built a shack, and needing probably just took 3 pieces of material, the zinc and the wood and nails, that's all. Now, whereas, if more people had more land, they could build bigger houses. Now, I want you to respond to that. Currently, the construction industry contributes close to 4% to the GDP, against agriculture, which contributes just a little over 2%. And you're pushing us towards the narrow side, to say that we must respect our culture, which takes me to my second point. Now, you're probably aware that the amount of food that is produced in South Africa is mainly done by a tiny percentage of commercial farmers, for that matter. 2-3 years ago, this was reported to be no more than 3% of commercial farmers that feed, that produce over 90% of the food we eat in South Africa. Position may have changed, but I don't think it has changed a lot. Now, you are confining this large issue to tiny agriculture, and this reminds me, in finishing here, in closing here, of the painful experience I had when I was in Canada towards the end of September, when I told that when people moved in there and found the First Nation already occupying Canada, those people from Europe came and wanted to offer themselves, were offering themselves as father. They would say to people, I'll be your father, I will live after you. And now you are saying that South Africans were landless. Instead of amending the constitution so that they can have the freedom and unfettered access to land, they should cow under these fathers for life, these commercial farmers, who do not have a record of supplying excess food to starving South Africans. And this is the direction you're pushing us. Am I right or wrong? The answer is in your hand.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a question, not making a speech. A lot of the focus in these hearings was on rural land and agricultural land, but the biggest challenge the next 10 years for the country is urbanization. There's going to be a lot of more people moving into the cities due to pull and push factors. Now, my question is, what mechanisms can be used to ensure that we make more land available on a much more quicker basis? There's been some proposals for unused land, unproductive land, buildings that's not been used, owners that's left the country. Those three indicators, can we use that, and what do you propose dealing with that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just 3 points. Mr. Bernstein, thank you very much for your presentation. At some point you indicated that, and I agree with you, that the current farming community are the best place to transfer skills, and therefore we must not. We must not mess with them in North Carolina. Are you suggesting that we then are going to be held ransom, that we must be nice to them? Because if we mess with them, they will sabotage us. So that's what you're suggesting. Secondly, you somewhere in your paper say that the restitution redistribution process is in a shambles because of a whole host of things that we agree, all of us agree. And it's going to take a very long time. So if we don't do something different, must our people, all people, wait for this very long time that you are suggesting is going to happen? Because I'm asking that question because we know that land has been the source of intergenerational wealth. So some people must wait for a very long time because of something that's not their fault. And therefore this intergenerational wealth is going to be denied of it. Please comment on that one. And then the third point that I want to make, ma'am, and let's assume we all agree with what you are saying, that the Constitution in its current form doesn't impede. Is there any harm in putting a sentence that makes it very explicit and uncontestable? Is there any harm in doing that? Because we're not changing it. We are just emphasizing what is already there. Yeah, Bonga Chaka.
Thank you very much. Maybe you can respond.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and some important questions. There are different land needs across South Africa as we see them. There are some communities that, because of apartheid, are in very crowded circumstances, and people would like to farm and are able to farm, and they need some access to more land. So there are pockets of those, and we should identify those. There are people who, the parts of the former Bantustan areas that used to be incredibly crowded, that now, because of urbanization, there is land lying fallow. We've just published an article today by two noted historians who have done intensive research demonstrating this, which was news to me. So I think that's important as well. Why is it fallow? What prevents people using this land? What is going on? I don't claim to know. So I think there are different land needs across the country, and that will play out in different ways. On the other hand, if you think of the urban land need, which the President has also said is in more compelling in some ways, and I agree with that, I think we've got to think about this in a number of ways. So there are people in the inner cities of the big metros where individuals and private sector funding are leading to greater density in traditionally one-family household sort of suburbs. We're getting 30 people on a plot. We're getting landlord entrepreneurs doing this. We need to encourage this, and we need to support it with whatever public services are required. So I can see a way of densifying the city, which might be rental, it might be ownership, but it's not land in the traditional sense. For a long time, we've said we should release more land as well located as possible around in urban areas, which is not being utilized, whether it's owned by the state, and the kind of thing that the mayor of Johannesburg is starting to explore. We would support that kind of thing. So that you can, in the urban areas, you can start thinking less about land and more about people's need for a secure place to stay and access to work, and how we combat apartheid cities. I think, I know time is limited, so let me pull out a big theme. The way we understand property rights is not that the commercial farmers should hold South Africa to ransom. That's not what we're saying at all. I think if you read the submission of BASA, the Banking Association of South Africa, and if you think back to what Mike Brown of Nedbank was saying and BASA was saying, they're saying that you touch property rights so that it might be a perception, so that people feel they're insecure, they will stop investing. So one of the senior investment ambassadors said to me, I've walked the streets of London, and every time I was asked about land, we haven't even started to do anything, your committee's reviewing it, investors are nervous. So the issue isn't that commercial farmers should hold South Africa to ransom. To my mind, the issue is South Africa has to, as fast as we can, without chaos, move towards a very different, build on the progress we have made. We have made some in 24 years. But build on that progress to ensure that those people who want to farm are getting opportunities to farm, whether it's through going to agricultural college or access to land in one way or another. I'm very impressed by what the sugar industry has done. They put enormous resources into this until government policy changed. They set up a special institution to help identify those people who wanted to farm. People could come, they could go to various workshops, and then they were helped to identify land, and then the local farming community would help them as they started off and do, you know, they were part of the farming community, and a lot of them have succeeded, large numbers, 20,000. So I think you've got to think about this in terms of the realities of agriculture and the realities of urbanization, and then understand that if you touch the constitution, even to restate what's already there and make it stronger, well, firstly, I don't think you'd get it to Parliament, but that's another matter, but you make everybody, investors who have to risk other people's money, get very nervous. Why should I do this? If you do it once, maybe next year you'll do it again and more seriously. So to my mind, what we're saying is you touch property rights in one sector of the economy, and it's not clear the property can be defined much more broadly, it is at the moment, than just agricultural land. It will affect urban investment in the cities, which we desperately need, and it will affect rural investment. And it will set up a chain reaction of nervousness at a time when South Africa is desperate for increased investment. And property rights is fundamental to the kind of economy that we have. So I can't deal with all the issues, but I am saying that the whole purpose of the government's redistribution policy is to redistribute land for people who want to be farmers. So I'm trying to answer your question, if you're interested. The whole purpose is to try and redistribute land, which is different from restitution, which is about redress. And to my mind, if people want to take money, it was a very bad decision to say you can't anymore, because they're the better judges of what's best for them than I am. I do understand land is a lot more than economics, and for many families who lost their land, were pushed off their land, were treated abominably, I'm trying and understand the emotions that this must give rise to. But I think for me, we're no longer in the 19th or the 20th century. Land, I understand that, I hear you. But if you're looking at the whole country and how we move forward and how we're going to create jobs for millions and millions of people and how we deal with this wound, I think you have to think, we all, South Africans have to think hard about, we are 70% urbanized. The land is about 10% of the value of a commercial farm. So, you know, if a young person came to me today and said, what should I do with the rest of my life? I'm sure most of you wouldn't say, gee, you need a piece of land somewhere in rural South Africa and that will set you up for the rest of your career. So what I'm trying to say, I'm not being facetious, I'm trying to say we live in a different world today.
Hello.
Which
address the chair.
Sure.
Yeah, just address the chair.
Ah, okay.
2 minutes to wrap up. Don't try to address individual members, please.
Well, I was trying to do that, Mr. Chairman, but I think there are a number of questions that have come out. I am saying property rights will affect the entire economy if we undermine them in any way at all, not just agriculture. Secondly, I'm saying South Africa must deal with the wound. We must deal with regress. But if you do this on a mass expropriation basis, I think you will create chaos. What the Constitution does is it allows for individual judicial and legal supervision of land regress and the circumstances that people's history and their faith. And that's the best way to prevent chaos. We also need to be very clear as to how many people want to farm. And would they prefer urban land and security or rural land? And I think we need to know more than we do. So I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful. Thank you for your contributions and thank you for making time to balance.
Thanks
for
the opportunity.
Members, thank you for honoring this session. Of course, it was not as easy as we anticipated, but thank you very much. I think we have come to the end of this session. What is left is for us to meet as from next week to maybe receive a comprehensive report on the processes that have ensued and to engage. And that will be the time for the debate. It was very unfortunate that at times it seems as if we were debating with the presenters. And those who were touched receive our apologies from Parliament. Thank you very much. The session. Oh.
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Just before we adjourn, do we have any progress with regard to the report, with regard to the written submission? Remember last time we spoke to you, we sent people back basically and say, go and have a relook, but I haven't received anything yet, so I don't know where that is. That will be helpful before we start to do that. I'm just going to that point.
Okay, what I'm thinking is, as we meet next week, the report that we get
will actually cover even that particular aspect. Yes. I believe members have been to that area to go and apply their mind. You're still busy there? Okay. Please do that. This session is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.